Paris attacks, terrorism, and the elections in France. That's what we're going to be talking about today on the Terrorist Therapist Show. Welcome. I'm Dr. Carol, a psychiatrist, and your terrorist therapist. I'm here to help you and your family reach your dreams despite living in a time of terror. Well, there's a lot of hot stuff happening in Paris. Some of the hot stuff is the continuation of all the horrendous terrorist attacks, but also, of course, what's the most current thing and most important thing that's happening is the election that's going to be happening in May, the runoff. Of course, there was already the preliminary election, and that narrowed it down to two candidates, Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron. Two very, very different candidates. And we're going to be talking about that and how the terrorist attacks in France will affect voters as they go to vote this May. There have been studies about that, the impact of terrorism and so on, and we're going to be talking about that. But first, let's talk about this latest attack on the police officer on the Champs-Élysées. That was by Karim Cherfi. He killed the police officer, and he wounded several others. And this attack, even though it didn't kill or injure as many people in France as some of the other attacks in the last couple of years, still there was something very provocative, something very painful about this attack because it occurred on the Champs-Élysées. Now, as you may have heard in previous podcasts, I talk about how I lived in Paris for almost 3 years, and during a time when there was actually the hint of what was to come, a growing dissatisfaction and alienation of immigrants, standing on street corners and so on. But I can't really say that there was a terrorist attack in the kind of way that there are today. So the fact that it was on the Champs-Élysées, the pride of Paris, if not the pride of France, did really speak to the hearts of the French people. It's like this was an area that was supposed to be protected. In fact, what Champs-Élysées means is field of the gods or field of the blessed. And so you're not supposed to have a terrorist attack on the Champs-Élysées. I mean, you know, you're not supposed to have a terrorist attack anywhere in the world. But on this special spot, it's a spot where if you haven't been there, you need to go. It's beautiful. It's amazing. People sit out in cafes. I spent countless hours sitting in cafes, eating French food, shopping in the shops, just walking on the street and feeling elevated, feeling it's a feeling like you know you're in the most or one of the most special places in the world. And so the last thing that you would expect to happen would be the kind of violence that occurs in a terror attack. So let's look at him, the perpetrator of this attack, Karim Cherfi. He was known to authorities. That was what the media said after the attack. And of course, as I have talked about, that is one of the most frustrating things, because if they were known to authorities, why the hell were they still on the street? And why the hell were they allowed to perpetrate a terror attack? Now, he was known, this particular terrorist was known to have a predisposition for violence, animosity towards authority. He had, and listen to this, he tried to kill police officers twice before. He also had a sense of alienation. He spent a significant time of his life in the French prison system. Duh. That is what we are seeing more and more. I have talked about this in previous podcasts. I talked about it, for example, in regard to the Khalid Massoud, the British, the terrorist of the Westminster Bridge attack. and his lengthy history in prisons where he became radicalized. And I've also talked in previous podcasts that you may want to look up about how what we need to do to these jails and prisons to stop them from becoming hotbeds of radicalization. So here we have this latest man, latest terrorist, who indeed was radicalized in the French prison system, where there is a group of Islamic terrorists who radicalize petty criminals who originally, most of whom, start out without any particular religious beliefs, or at least not being radical Islamists. And yet, in prison, in jails and prisons, and I have spent a significant amount of time not being incarcerated, but as a forensic psychiatrist, an expert witness, I've done a lot of evaluations, psychiatric evaluations in these jails and prisons. And so I've seen how they work. You know, it's intimidating. Even just being there for the time that I do these evaluations, it's not a very pleasant place to be. It's all about intimidation by these authority figures who are the guards and the heads of the prison and the people who frisk you, you know, to before you go in to make sure that you're even, you know, the visitors even to make sure that you're not bringing in anything that is not allowed for prisoners to have, whether it's drugs or, of course, any kind of weapon or even food. You're not allowed to bring in anything. So, and because, you know, for example, and there have been escapes where people have smuggled in food that hid knives or razors in the food that prisoners then used. So anyhow, it's a very incredibly intimidating and uncomfortable and place that is filled with hostility from these guards towards the prisoners. You know, the people who choose to work in these jobs are people who like to have that power. Anyhow, it is not a surprise then that inmates are very vulnerable to hating authority figures, because that is what they do every day, sitting in their jail cell, being furious at the way that they're being treated in the jail. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, murderers and robbers and all that don't deserve to be in jail, and they shouldn't be, you know, treated to tea. But at the same time, it is just an atmosphere that makes them boil over with this hatred towards authority figures, and particularly police and people who are figures like police, like the guards and so on. So then when we have some radical Islamists also as inmates, it is very easy for them to get these angry prisoners to find a focus and a purpose, which is to go out after, when they're let out, to then perpetrate an act of terrorism in the name of Allah, you know, some kind of purpose to their life. And also it's important to understand who gets to be a prisoner in the first place. It's people who have had very troubled lives. Again, I've talked about this, like in the case of Massoud, the British terrorist creating the attack on the Westminster Bridge. But it's, you can look at it with lots. This really is the story of lots of terrorists who have been in this system, because they have troubled childhoods. It all starts out in childhood, and they have troubled childhoods, and that makes them angry in the first place and wanting to be violent. And they create a crime because of that. Then they're in the prison system, and then they get radicalized. It really makes all the sense in the world, and there are lots of things that can be done to stop it. So I refer you to my podcast where I talk about what can be done in these prison systems. But to move on, in the French prison system in particular, there have been examples of this, well-known examples of this. Mohamed Merah, he was the one, he was in the prison system, and in 2012, he murdered police officers and Jewish school children in Toulouse. You probably heard about that. Then there was Amadi Coulibaly, who killed a police trainee, and then also stormed the kosher supermarket and killed four hostages. You remember that. And then the Charlie Hebdo attacker, Saeed Kouachi, he also came out of the prison system and was radicalized there. All of these people were radicalized in the French prison system. Now, it's not just France where this problem of radicalization in prisons occurs. There have also been examples of terrorists radicalized in the prison system in the United States, in Belgium, in Canada, in Denmark, Germany, and in the United Kingdom. So this is a major hotbed that needs to be fixed. Part of the problem, of course, is that, the labels for things, people like CAIR, the Council on American Islamic Relations, try to censor any mention of Islamic radicalization from American law enforcement and military training. And then, of course, we also had President Obama, who didn't want us to use the words radical Islamist. Fortunately, of course, President Trump, has allowed that language, has been calling a spade. There's a great metaphor for this. If you take a warning label off a can that has poison in it, it doesn't mean that the poison inside the can has now become harmless because we're not calling it whatever kind of poison it is. Instead, it makes us more vulnerable, the people who are handling that can, more vulnerable to what's in it because they are not more careful about it and are not doing anything to try to prevent problems from it. So now, how does this affect elections? Well, we've had the first portion of the French elections, and the candidates were narrowed down to the two who had the highest number of votes, and that was Marine Le Pen, who is on the far right, and Emmanuel Macron, who is considered a centrist. Now, how do elections become affected by terror attacks? Well, that too is pretty intuitive. I mean, makes common sense that the more people are afraid of terrorism or being attacked, the more they are going to vote for a candidate who is the strongest against terrorism. Now, we have seen that in our own country, in America. I shouldn't say our own country. I know this podcast is being listened to all over the world. So I'll just say in America, we saw that happen. And in fact, I talked about that as the terrorist therapist, as someone who tries to warn people that terrorism is the biggest danger to America. My biggest reason, my strongest reason for supporting Trump, because I think so much of America is in denial, was in denial at the time of the election. I mean, obviously enough weren't to vote for Trump, who did vote for Trump, but America has to wake up and be in less denial about how we still are in grave danger of terrorism. 9/11 can happen again. And in the meantime, there have been many 9/11s, not so many. Orlando, for example, or San Bernardino, or the Boston Marathon. It's not really about the number of people who were killed or injured. So, of course, there are lots of other problems facing America, facing other countries. For example, the economy, that's a problem in America, and that's a problem in France, and there are all kinds of problems. But terrorism, being attacked, being overrun by terrorists, really is the number one problem. So in France, the fact that there has been these terrorist attacks over the last couple of years, which, you know, of course, the attacks in Paris, those were the the biggest ones, and then the truck attack in Nice, and then smaller attacks in smaller cities, which still have made headlines. And then, of course, the most recent one that I was just talking about on the Champs-Élysées. So all of these things are in the conscious and unconscious minds of French voters. So Marine Le Pen, the leader of the, representing the far right and speaking out, you know, shamelessly, well, I don't know, having no qualms about speaking out about what she wants to do to terrorists. And, you know, as far as making the borders safer and all kinds of things. And in some studies, it has been shown that terrorist attacks can shift support to right-wing parties by 1 or 2 percentage points. Now, that was in other countries. And but what it does, so it's not clear how many points, you know, we can't be specific as to how many points it's going to shift to the right-wing parties. But we do know, I mean, it's really totally makes sense that when people are most afraid of terrorism or very afraid of terrorism, they're going to choose somebody, vote for somebody who seems to take the strongest stand on terrorism. So it also, terrorist attacks, studies have found that terrorist attacks also create increased polarization. So that has sort of a different effect. So in other words, for Marine Le Pen, for example, yes, she'll get the votes of the people who are very afraid of terrorist attacks, but will she be able to sway some of the other voters on the other extreme? And that could be more difficult because of these terrorist attacks. It's particularly in these studies that have been done, they've looked at particularly terrorist attacks that have occurred in the 3 months before an election. And that has had the most effect. But again, in France, it's going to be the Champs-Élysées attack on this increasing background over the last 2 years, the heightened security that France is still under. So it's not just the Champs-Élysées. There are 10 million voters in Paris. There are 56 million voters outside of Paris in France. Will the voters living outside of Paris be less afraid of terrorism? Probably so, except for the ones in Nice and the ones in the other smaller cities that had smaller attacks. There also have been other studies that show a 2 to 6% increase in voter share for right-wing candidates based on when there have been terror attacks recently. So, and some of these had to do with, it wasn't necessarily just the people living in the city or the area where there was the attack, but there were people even who were outside of that immediate place, but who knew that they could be attacked, who felt also similarly insecure about whether they will be protected by terrorism. So the question is, will the people in France, you know, see this as just a Paris thing? Or will they realize, especially since the whole country is on high alert, will they realize that this could happen anywhere in France? Another way that terrorism affects voter choice is by how people view themselves and the rest of society. In other words, on their identity. Terror attacks makes people feel like they need to huddle with people who are like them, and be very afraid of people who are unlike them, who are causing these attacks. Now, of course, in France, like in America, it's not just immigrants. It's not just people who come from outside the country. It's homegrown terrorists. And of course, you know, a lot of these homegrown terrorists are people who have become inmates and who have become radicalized in prisons, as I was talking about. So, people in general, when there's the more terrorist attacks there are, the more people feel threatened and vulnerable, and the more they look towards a very strong politician to become their leader. And, you know, it really makes people, it changes all of society, not just in terms of elections, but also in terms of who people huddle with and how much they huddle. So in France, we've so far seen, it's been this, the election, the primary election has shocked a lot of people in France because it showed the collapse of the traditional parties, the parties that, you know, generally produce the presidents of France. And so it's shaken up the whole country and shaken up the whole political system. And I'm not endorsing one candidate or another. I'm merely describing, I want to make that clear. You know, there are, although Marine Le Pen does actually seem to be the one who would protect France the most from terrorists, she does have some, you know, it's not clear that her the other parts of her platform are the best for France. Now, Emmanuel Macron, who has more of a background in finance, you know, speaks to the people in France who are in denial about terrorism and are more concerned about their wallets. And neither one of the candidates actually have been talking very much about what they're going to do to prevent the radicalization of French citizens. But Marine Le Pen talks about, she's talking about the immediate expulsion of foreigners on the Fiche-S list. That's the list of those who have been, you know, under suspicion already for their links to radical Islamist terrorism. And she has other, she's also calling for, this is a bit extreme, she's calling for dual national terror suspects to have their French citizens stripped. Now, it's not clear what terror suspects. I mean, if there, presumably, if there was a good reason, if they were far along in their being a suspect, in their plans for an attack and so on, yes, I think that wouldn't be a bad idea. Now, Emmanuel Macron has said that he would have 10,000 more police and gendarmes on the streets of France over the next 5 years and set up a task force against Islamic State. You know, these people with task force, I mean, that's the difference. That's really the difference. On the one hand, we have Marine Le Pen, whose ideas for protecting the French people from terrorism are a little extreme. But on the other hand, we have Macron, who's going to be setting off setting up a task force to study the problem. I mean, seriously, you know, how much more do we need? I mean, yes, you know, of course, it's good to keep studying and to keep, especially in regard to the prisons and all of that. That's all great. But you need to, I mean, these attacks are happening fast and furious, so you can't just set up a task force to study the problem. You have to take action. Now, the idea of putting 10,000 more police and gendarmes on the streets of Paris, I got to tell you, as someone who lived in Paris, that, you know, that makes me sick that we, that our world has come to this. But, yes, you know, I guess that would be helpful to some degree, but it doesn't really get at the root of the problem. The root of the problem is getting rid of the people in the country who are likely to commit terrorist attacks and to set up things in prisons to stop the radicalization. Well, why don't I go now to a letter that I received, an email actually, from Charles in Seattle, Washington. Hey, terrorist therapist, this is too much already. The world is going nuts. Every time there is an election, whether here in the U.S. or in Europe, people get more agitated, which means I get more agitated. All this fighting is just too much, and I worry about the world I'm leaving for my kids. Got any suggestions? Well, I actually am going to give you some suggestions. I'm going to try to give some positive aspects to what people can do, not just talk about the doom and gloom of terrorism. So I'll close with something. These are some from the chapter called Psychological Survival Skills, Gear and Maps, that are in my first terrorism book, Coping with Terrorism, Dreams Interrupted. And there are like 365 things that you can do. Surely I'm going to just read a few, but surely you can find some of them that talk to you. So one of them is balance stops you from stumbling. Each day is Groundhog Day. You're caught in a perpetual balancing act between bravado and fear, denial and panic. One moment you're pretending that your world hasn't changed, and the next you're wallowing in self-pity. Strive for balance and extend your hand to help someone else who has lost his footing. Here's another one. Balloons boost your spirits. Most people stop playing with balloons when they grow up, although deep inside a part of us still yearns for them. Children like Pascal in the hauntingly poignant French classic film Le Ballon Rouge, The Red Balloon, wholeheartedly befriend balloons. Perhaps grown-ups shun balloons not because they're intrinsically only for kids, but because we no longer want to risk our heart on something we're bound to lose. Cherish the child in you. Befriend a balloon, a red balloon. Well, I'm gonna just give you those two for today. I love the one that has to do with France. That's what we need to do. The French have to start reminding themselves about this this story, the Ballon Rouge, and start carrying balloons and cheering each other up. I think that would be a great idea. Well, we've come to the end of the Terrorist Therapist Show. I want to thank you for listening. I want to tell you how you can please contact me. Send me questions, send me comments, tell me what you'd like me to talk about. You can go to my website, which is www.terroristtherapist.com. Or you can go to my Facebook page. If you just put in on Facebook, The Terrorist Therapist, you will come to my page. And my one thing that is close to being available to help you is my second book on terrorism, which is called Lions and Tigers and Terrorists, Oh My, How to Protect Your Child in a Time of Terror. We are getting very close to the release date. So thank you again. I'm Dr. Carol, your terrorist therapist, and thank you for listening to the Terrorist Therapist Show.